RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on the various episodes. This week, we celebrate 50 Shades of Green as we look into some amazing leather-clad women and, DJs really getting down, if you know what I mean. So, oh, yeah, there you go.
Oh,
yeah, that was
I was getting down.
Hey, knock it off in there. So, that's about it. So, Josh and I are going to be covering this episode tonight. Josh, you want to tell the lovely audience out there what show it is?
What show it is? This is the show Arrow. It is on the CW.
Okay.
But this particular episode, it was more about birdies than arrows. So it was called Canaries, which I don't know. I don't know if that fit this episode. We can talk about that a little bit. I need them to go back to the titles where they had a little, a theme or something, that we could connect to stuff, because this one was a little bit, I don't know, it didn't fit the canary thing. I even looked for symbols online for canaries. So, let me break down the episode itself here. It was number 13 from season 3, aired February 11th of 2015. It was written by Jake Coburn and Amelia Ortega Aldrich.
Dritch.
We're going to go with Aldrich. Yeah. Dritch? Oh, sounds wrong. Dang it. That's okay. I'm always wrong. They know that. They just expect that now. So, directed by Mike Schultz. No, Schultz. Sorry, Schultz. Michael Schultz. So some very fine writers and directors, by the way. Don't take my mispronunciation personally. Canaries. It's a battle of the birds on this week's episode. Canary versus canary. Well, that's at least what, Count Vertigo wants Laurel to think. Laurel, much like Oliver, is trying to come to terms with her being a vigilante and taking her sister's place. He doesn't like that much, but, she's trying to make it work. But that's especially tough when Count Vertigo's on the loose. Oliver's trying to come to terms with needing Merlin's help to stop Ra's al Ghul, so he can't really focus too much on this right now. But he finally and nervously reveals his secret to Thea. But I thought she took it pretty well. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. But
yeah, little huggy, better than I think expected.
Oh yeah, for sure. I thought there'd be another storm out. I don't know, Mexican soap opera scene maybe. I don't know. Now that she knows about Oliver, she's not too sure about Papa Merlin. So this disjointed family. Man, is that the understatement of the century? It's going to have to learn to trust each other if they're going to stay safe. And we see that in Oliver's past, Amanda Waller has her claws very securely in Oliver. And she wants him to betray Maceo and pursue China Wei. Can I just call her China White? That's what Oliver calls her.
Yeah.
If he calls her that, I feel it's fair game. A lot of fears are going to have to be overcome this week as the team takes on their heroic tasks to the next level.
And not everybody's a hero, but they're all working towards it right now. I feel like this is this was an interesting episode. It seems to be sort of a transition episode between the last little kind of the mini series we got focusing on Team Arrow without Oliver, sans Oliver, and what they've got set up for the end of the season here. It's because there's 10 more episodes left, which seems like a bunch, but I can't believe we're at episode 13 as it is. So
I agree. It is going fast. And you know, you said kind of like a transition episode, and I agree with that. I would say it's almost like they're kind of establishing who the you know, the characters are now that they've changed from the experience that Oliver had. Does that make sense? It's like they and we'll talk about this because this is a big part of this episode is how they have. Yeah. They're redefining themselves. And so they have to sort of reestablish where they're going to go from here. So I kind of feel like that's what this episode was all about. And hopefully from here, they can kind of ramp up the action a little bit. There was some action in this one, but I feel like it was more much like the first season. The action kind of each time Oliver had an encounter with somebody, it sort of dictated who he was going to become as a hero.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. This episode, like you said, it was a little lighter on the action. It was heavy on the waterworks. A lot of emotions close to and on the surface in this episode.
But yes.
We'll get to that in just a moment here. One of the other reasons I kind of indicate this as sort of a transition piece is Mark Guggenheim, who's one of the producers of the show. If you guys have listened to our show before, we talk about him a lot. We had him on, between first and second season, I think. We had him on the show.
Yeah, I think so.
So you can go back in our archives and look for that interview. But he's always given interviews, talking a little bit about what they're looking to do, you know, guest stars and just kind of the direction that the show's taking. And he had this really great tweet that I wanted to share with everybody because we've had an interesting year so far. And, you know, there, of course, was a lot of discussion for the 6 weeks over winter break. You know, had they or had they not killed Oliver, how's he going to come back and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it gave us a chance to think about what the show would be without Oliver on it. And it gave us a chance on the show to see his team grow as characters and as heroes in their own right and, you know, basically work on defining themselves. So what Guggenheim says is, he says, as I tweeted out, when all is said and done with season 3, stabbing Oliver through the chest and kicking him off a cliff will end up being the least crazy thing we do all year. I encourage people to watch the whole season and then confirm whether or not I'm telling the truth. So what Mark is trying to tell us, Josh, in the next 10 episodes, because I don't see anything really that crazy that has happened in the last 3 episodes, or the last 4 episodes, I guess. Maybe some of the truth reveals, the revealing of the truth and stuff in this episode. Maybe some of that's a little crazy, but I don't think it's crazier than stabbing Oliver and throwing him off a cliff. But in the next 10 episodes, there's going to be stuff that's crazier than that.
Huh. Yeah.
Do you believe him?
I do, because because they've done this before to us, you know. Just when we thought they wouldn't push it any further, or we thought we knew what they were doing, and they kind of push us in a direction we never expected. So I believe him. I don't know that that's the least crazy thing that they do, but I certainly believe that there will be more crazy things than that.
Well, and what's also great is we know that they're going into a fourth season, so they have the ability to take, you know. And, you know, re-ramp the end of this season to springboard us into a fourth season. And, you know, what kind of crazy things they've got going there. I mean, we've got tons of guest stars, you know, guest characters and stuff that have shown up on the show this season that I don't think we ever would have dreamt about when we started talking about this, you know, 2.5 years ago.
Agreed. And if you think about it too, there's quite a few, you know, little pieces hanging over the head back in the back of the closet that they haven't addressed, discussed, or are just kind of still there that they pushed back. You know, we haven't talked about Oliver's kid for a long time. You know, Slade Wilson's still out there. So I mean, there's tons of stuff that they can pull from that they've touched on, and that's not even, you know, mentioning any of the things from the comics that they haven't ever done.
Right.
So,
You know, at this point, with the mythology they've set up, if they don't really do a storyline from the comics, I would not be disappointed.
Me neither.
They've built a lot of mythology. I mean, I'd love to see, you know, the Huntress come back. I'd love to see them go up against the Royal Flush Gang, since they put them on Flash the other week. If you guys didn't see that, it was just a kind of throwaway intro, like a cold open, but it was pretty cool. So, but we're here to discuss this particular episode of Arrow called Canaries. So why don't we move on into this? And I think what the first place I want to go for this episode, because this I think to me seemed like the theme that we were dealing with, a kind of an overarching theme for this particular episode, was trust. And you mentioned the trust of characters in your little opening about the characters having learned to trust each other if they're going to stay safe. So I thought it was an interesting, like I said, as a transition episode, it worked pretty well because the last three episodes focused on Roy, Felicity, Diggle, and Laurel, basically. Mm-hmm. And as they all, you know, take their game to the next level, have to decide how they are going to survive and thrive without Oliver, and whether or not they were going to continue his quest or his, you know, the program that he had set up here to basically keep Starling City safe. And it's at some point, you know, they all pulled back a little bit, but then they decided that they were all into it for different reasons, but for themselves. It wasn't just that they were following Oliver. So I think that the character growth that we've seen over the last few episodes is that each of these characters, Diggle, Felicity, Roy, and Laurel, have all learned in some fashion to trust themselves a little bit more. Diggle, maybe not so much, you know, because he's been pretty competent as a soldier. I think there's mention in this episode, you know, he talks about how Laurel's not a soldier or... who is it? Oliver was saying, I think Laurel's not a soldier to Diggle, which is weird because Roy's not a soldier either. But I don't know. You know, Oliver was just seeming, I guess, overprotective of Laurel. You know, he's still not quite on board the Laurel train.
Interesting that it was a little bit of season one Oliver a little bit, you know, how he's just overprotective of her. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like in this episode they're pushing him out of that, and because, like I said earlier, the way that the team has changed, they're kind of getting him on board that train, so he will kind of understand where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it took them a long time to realize that not only is Laurel ready, or, you know, she's not really ready, but not only is she capable of maybe helping them, but it took them a long time to realize that each one of them is capable. You know, I mean, first they started with Felicity, mm-hmm. and then Roy. I guess, you know, he's always kind of trusted Diggle because of his background, but
yeah, considering he was his bodyguard, and, you know, I guess he knew he could trust him. But I mean, Diggle's gone through his own share of doubt and issues. He you know,
sure.
He may be the only one that's not been dosed by Vertigo as well.
I think. Oh, interesting.
Roy was dosed, I believe.
That was the first episode, wasn't it? Of the season, first or second, something like that.
Oh yeah, of this episode, yeah, with Werner's idol. I'm thinking back to even with the other count, because I know Felicity. I think. You know, Diggle might have gotten dosed in that by the other count, by the older count, on his last appearance, because he had that, he kind of sprayed it throughout the city.
Right? Oh, right.
Felicity got dosed. I can't remember if Diggle was dosed on that or not. Anyway, interesting stuff. We'll talk a little bit more about the Vertigo stuff here as we move into it. But I like that all these different characters are... You know, they're learning to trust themselves. And then the big trust changer in this whole kind of thing is the fact that Oliver has decided to trust Merlin. Last week he had decided that they needed to work with him, and now he's basically, you know, putting his full faith behind Merlin in the fact that he can get trained in order to kill Ra's al Ghul. That's
now,
the end game that we're heading
to. The words he used to Thea are trust, you know, that we've got to trust each other. I think that was him that said that. I don't know, though. I mean, I feel as if, or maybe this is just my hope, that he's not really trusting Merlin. I don't think you can ever trust Merlin. It's more like they're just kind of using him, you know, using him for a purpose. But I can't believe that Oliver would truly trust Merlin.
Well, okay, so what is the difference between, in your mind then, between trusting Merlin and then just using Merlin? How do you see that differing for what Oliver is doing?
I see it. If you put your trust in someone, you know that they kind of have your back, you know. So if you're in a
fight, well, you hope
fight,
they do.
Well, that's what trust is,
right? Right.
You know, that's what trust is. You know, they'll catch you if there's somebody behind you, or you know if you get separated, they'll find you again, or if you're captured, they'll come after you. But to me, it feels like they're putting their faith just in Merlin's training, and I don't think he would be, you know, believe what anything he says. I don't think he would count on him in a dire situation. I think he would have to get out of it himself, because Merlin's probably not going to be there.
Right.
I mean, that's what he does. That's what makes him the villain. That's what he's looking out for himself. He'll look for a way out of a situation for himself and not worry about his partners. Or so
what do you feel about
a difference.
What do you feel about that old phrase, the enemy of my enemy is my friend? Do you feel that applies here in any fashion?
Yes. I mean, absolutely. Now, we talked about this heavy last week, and it was interesting. My wife and I got I don't want to say a disagreement, but a discussion where we agreed to disagree.
Aggressive negotiations?
Not quite, but whether he should be going with Merlin or not, whether he should be accepting Merlin's help. And like I said last week, I think there's another way. I think there's always another way. And when you use... I won't say the dark side, you know, use the bad to get what you want. I feel as if you're going down the wrong path, but you know, and she was kind of on the same team as Oliver was saying, you know, look, we're just, I have to have him. That's the only way I'm going to be able to do it. And so, he is the enemy of his enemy, but to me, it's like you're both enemies, so you got to watch out for both of them. So,
well, basically, I mean, I think his training is crap because Thea folded like a big house of cards in her first at bat here.
Well, now, to be fair, she was completely untrained when he first got her, and he only had her for, what, like 6 months or something like that. So,
yeah, over the summer and then the beginning of the season here, so... I thought you were going to say she was still in post-coital glow or something like that. But.
No. God, I hope not. I don't even want to think about that. Stop. I was thinking, you know, at the beginning of the season, how confident she looked and how strong. And I mean, and she really did, you know, when she was fighting Merlin with the swords.
Even two or three episodes ago, she was very strong and confident standing up. We're not going to let Ra's al Ghul push us out of town. You know?
Yeah.
You taught me to be strong.
But then I thought, well, wait a minute. You know what? It's kind of like if you know somebody that's taken a month worth of kickboxing classes. You know, they're feeling real confident and good. Look, I know all these moves. But then they go up against somebody that's been training for years and it's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what she is. You know, she has some skills. But just like Laurel, she's not really qualified to go up against the A team, the professionals. So, maybe the A team. They haven't brought the A team in yet. Maybe Mr. T could be a villain. That could.
I pity the fool.
And, you know, they've kind of shown that same thing with Laurel, too. I mean, she really she gets her butt handed to her every week. Yeah. But she still goes out there, you know? She's still...
She's got a lot of heart. That's... Yeah. I'll give her that. But you know what? This is... I still hear people talking and grousing a lot online and in person about Laurel. But less so on Laurel now that she's kind of taking an active part in the show. And Thea's become kind of the de facto punching bag for the show. I heard a lot of complaints about Thea this week, but you do raise a really interesting point there that Thea and Laurel, you know, they both undergone some training. They both feel like they're ready to progress, but they are not at that place in their training that they can, you know,
well,
be that kind of fighter.
Right.
You know,
and despite both of their pain and anguish that they have suffered, you know, and they have, you know, they've had some big setbacks and some personal family trauma and things like that. But despite that, like I've said several times this season, they haven't had the 5 years of hell, you know, like Oliver and Sarah went through.
Right.
To get the in the trenches kind of training that they need.
Right. Right. Okay. So, trusting Merlin, probably not the best, course of action. So
I still say no.
We'll chalk that up there. There's some other, trust, that is being built, I think, as well. After numerous discussions that we've had here on the show about Oliver keeping the secret from his sister and did or did not Merlin tell Thea that Oliver was the arrow, Oliver finally reveals it to her. And like right up at the top of the episode, I thought it was a really interesting way and a really smart way that he shared the information with Thea. Instead of just coming out and telling her, he took her down to the basement, which she still thought was flooded, bless her heart, after however long, you know, and the fact that she didn't even think that, well, if it's been flooded for 2 years, wouldn't it be smelling or something? You know, I mean, it's just...
Maybe I should call someone.
She's so precious. So they go down and she puts it all together. I thought that was a... I thought Willa did a good job with that sequence. But I haven't talked to anybody that wasn't surprised by the fact that she was totally okay with this. I mean, did that catch you off guard? It sure did for me.
Yeah, I thought she'd be mad. I mean, she's gotten mad at every other person that's told her a lie in 3 years.
Right.
I was shocked. In a good way. I didn't mind. I actually liked the way they did it. And I liked the way he didn't tell her. He just took her down there.
Right, and she said that, you know, you mean every time you were going out there and telling me some stupid lie, you were actually at saving people? Oh, I can't believe you saved people. That's so great. And I'm like, what? And so again, I enjoyed it. I thought it was an interesting way to go about doing it. But what I got thinking about later is, like you said, she was getting pissed at anybody that was telling her a lie. And she, at the beginning of the season, it was either the first or the second episode when they're in, or actually, well, it was the episode, it was Quarter Maltese, when Oliver went down to talk to her. She was so vehement about being lied to that Oliver was going to go over and talk to her, remember? And then Merlin was actually in the house with the arrow, and he either knocked, but he didn't go in or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, she's really going to castrate him when he tells her the truth. And all that anger, whatever resentment she has been feeling towards Oliver just about his generic lies and about all the lies that went untold, you know, previously that she, you know, was going to be upset about, like, that's just gone. And I don't know. I feel her character has changed way too quickly or without provocation. because now all of a sudden...
Are you talking about now in this episode she's changed or before?
Well, I can't really tell that... I mean, she seems more, you know, confident and stronger, and we've seen that kind of slowly ramping up, and that's cool. But in this episode, it was just such a quick twist. She wasn't mad at Oliver, and then because Oliver revealed this to her, all of a sudden everything else clicks into her brain, and she's super pissed at Malcolm again for driving a wedge between her and Oliver. So she's jumped from Team Merlin, who she was really gung-ho with for, you know, 9-10 episodes here at the beginning of the season, and boom, you know, is go Ollie.
Yeah. I was more thrown by her her change of feelings about Merlin than I was by her reaction to Oliver.
Okay.
Oliver's truth. I agree with you. It seemed out of place after how strong she's been this season, and how confident and how much she was on board with Merlin. But you know, also having said that, if you think about some of this stuff that she can piece together now that she knows the truth about Oliver and what Merlin has done and why Oliver has not told her everything and, you know, what has come about. And, you know, plus I couldn't pick up on whether he told, I don't think so, but whether Oliver told her the real reason that Ra's al Ghul was after them. Did you think he left that part out? That's kind of what I was feeling.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Right. That the fact that she has killed, that she killed Sarah. No, that.
Yeah. Because I would have completely understood.
Yeah.
You know,
I would have understood that. Yeah, that's true.
But I don't think he told her. I don't think he mentioned that part.
No.
So.
No, which is, again, just another potential thorn that can be pulled out at some point. You know, it's going to be something where the three of them are going against Ra's al Ghul, Merlin, Thea, and Oliver, and Ra's al Ghul's like, you know, oh yeah, you know, by the way, thanks for killing Sarah, and that's gonna put Thea out of commission, and I don't know. But with her being like really heavy Team Arrow this episode, in conjunction with the overuse of the name Speedy, both in present day and in flashbacks, I felt that was a little too heavy-handed. I feel like the producer said, hey, we need to remind everybody that she's called Speedy. So can you guys, like, can you write that into the script, you know, like once or twice? And they just went, ooh, Speedy, 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 Speedy. So I think I counted four references to Speedy, three or four at least. So
I
kind of see where this might be going.
I saw a lot of people. I saw a couple people say something about that, and it didn't bother me too much. But but I understand where you're coming from.
And I understand
overused, not necessary.
Right. Well, we haven't had a reason to use it because Oliver's the only one that calls her that. I think Roy did it once, and she's like, no, you can't do that. And since Oliver and her really have not been on terms, so you know. And again, like I said, I think one of them was in the flashback with Waller using the term Speedy. But, you know, it's Oliver's affectionate nickname, and it kind of shows us that, you know, he can talk to his sister again, which is good. I hope that she is not brainwashed in, you know, by Merlin for any of this. I hope this is, like, honestly what, you know, that she's happy that Oliver told her the truth, because
okay,
remember
why
was
do you hope
forgetful
that?
Drug and stuff, and maybe
oh, yeah.
Merlin.
But why do you hope that?
Huh?
Why do you hope that? Wouldn't that make it interesting? You'd rather she just kind of play it out with her real self and her true emotions.
I don't know.
I can see that.
I mean, I know where you're coming from, and from a dramatic standpoint, it's like if she was brainwashed into not getting angry at Oliver when he told her the truth because Malcolm had told her the truth, and then he hypnotized her, brainwashed her, whatever, and sent her in there, you know, to get Oliver to do. So again, it would be a great ploy for him to for Merlin to get Oliver to do what Merlin wants, right? To give him his sister back and have his sister be all gung-ho for whatever is going on. I don't know. I feel like Oliver's family has just taken enough abuse. Let's have Diggle and Deadshot fight some more. Let's bring the Huntress back in and do something with her. Let's torture some other characters for a while.
I'm with you. Actually, I'm kind of I don't want to say over. That's a little bit harsh when I say over. I would like to see them go in a different direction from the family dynamics aspect of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily a negative connotation, but the soap opera part of it, you know? I mean, yeah. Yes, okay, we get it. He's dedicated to his family. You know, he's only got one left, so he needs to start dedicating himself to some other things now. Just to kind of get more toward the saving the city and I really like the intense storylines where there's a deeper thing going on, like with Slade Wilson all last season, you know, where there's something underhanded that they have to sort of slowly get to the bottom of, which they've done this season with Sarah's murder. And Sarah's murder has led to this whole situation with Ra's al Ghul and how he has to, you know, work with Merlin. I mean, it's sort of interwoven in between. And I like those parts of the show. But the family part of it, I'm just like, all right, come on, you know.
Yeah.
We get it. They're very close and stuff, so you don't have to keep emphasizing. Because I like when Oliver changes. I like when he realizes that he can be better than what he is. That's what I believe continues to make him a true hero.
Yeah. Well, if you don't like the family stuff, you're going to be really upset when Robert Queen comes back from the dead at the end of the season.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, so. He didn't get a sword through his chest. So.
No. He just put a bullet in his brain 5 years ago. Well, more than 5 years ago now.
Hey, you thought that was crazy.
Let's see. And so another big piece of trust is that while Oliver has just returned, right? It's been like a week, they said, basically, since his return, where they're kind of back to doing the show in real time, right? So it's been a week since the last time mm-hmm. we saw stuff they were working on.
Okay. Can I say one thing?
Yeah.
Okay. So like a week ago, I got an ingrown toenail.
Yeah.
And it still hurts.
Well.
I'm just saying. Maybe I didn't have enough penicillin tea, but.
No, I'm just saying that you haven't spent 5 years in hell.
Oh, that's true.
Because, I mean, do you hear Oliver ever complain about anything? No.
Just that his friends are working hard and fighting to save the city. But right, other than that, right. No.
Oh, owsie, I got a boo-boo. So, but Oliver, he's like, okay, well, I'm back. So everything needs to go back to the status quo. And, you know, Felicity steps up to him and as her kind of de facto role of you know, Team Arrow mouthpiece, and says
mom. Team Arrow mom
and says, no, you know, this is not how it works anymore. You know, you have to understand that we all went through some change, and just because you weren't here, you know, it's very self-centered of Oliver. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, I'm sure you have friends like this or people that you know where when they leave a room, they assume that everything else just stops. And so when they come back in, they expect it just to be exactly like it was when they left. And they don't understand that everybody else has lives and things happen, you know, while they're gone or sleeping or whatever.
What are you saying?
No, I'm just saying, not you, you know, people you know.
All right.
Oh, geez, you're so sensitive.
Just, you know what? I just don't like it when people talk about me.
All right. I'm not talking behind your back or anything. I mean, I'm telling you this straight up.
All right.
So
I'm with you, and I can't remember if I was talking to you about this, you know, off the show or about a different show, but
okay.
I can't. But well, you know what? I want that change. I need him to make a big change, and I like that they have they're evolving as characters.
Yeah,
I've said I want Roy to develop into this hero. And he is. Look, I mean, he totally stood up to Oliver this week. And Oliver's like, oh, no, you didn't. You don't talk to me like that. And he's like,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
I do.
That was good. I mean, and
it was. It was wonderful.
Roy, you know, just 8 episodes ago wouldn't have done that, you know?
No.
So Oliver's getting to the point where he trusts his team. And he make, you know, that's his leap that he makes throughout this episode. So the rest of the team has had 3 episodes to kind of understand themselves a little more and trust in themselves. And this week it's Oliver's turn to get that trust in his team. And so that by the time at the end of the episode, when he and Thea decide to go backpacking, walk the Appalachian Trail, so to speak. That's a totally horrible metaphor. I forgot completely about what that meant. But, you know, he's like, I trust you guys. You know, I can leave you in charge, and it's okay. It's Laurel can stay up past her bedtime. It's totally cool with that. And, you know, Felicity, you got things under control. And Roy, I trust you. And Diggle, you know, make sure nobody gets into too much trouble. So I think that's great. It allows the writers the freedom to have these episodes where they don't have to always have the characters together. We can have Diggle go off and do his own thing, and we can have an episode where there's a Diggle storyline and a Laurel storyline and a Roy storyline and an Oliver storyline. And Felicity can be the one that kind of, you know, is the backbone and floats between everybody else's events or something like that. I think it really opens up a lot of cool possibilities for the future.
Agreed. Although I worry about them separating storylines too much.
From a storytelling standpoint or from a understandability standpoint?
Storytelling.
Okay.
And I was trying to think as you were describing, I was trying to think of another show as an example, and I couldn't think of one off the top of my head, but just, you know, sometimes that you get off into these different story branches and they start to become unrelated to each other, and then you just have, you know, 2 or 3 shows within a show, and it gets a little, it doesn't flow as well. I kind of worry about that. If you just do it every once in a while, it's no big deal. But
sure.
Again, it's a horrible explanation. I apologize. But
no, I mean, that's true.
I like that there's some sort of connection.
In a normal episode, you know, you might only have 2, maybe 3 storylines happening at once. I mean, they usually don't try to break it up because, I mean, you really only have, I think, 40 minutes of usable time. So if you know, start breaking stuff up into too many stories, you don't get enough for that one story to be told. You know, it only ends up being, what, like 15 minutes, a little less than 15
uh-huh.
minutes, 12 minutes a pop or something like that, you know? So, but no, like, I mean, really the thing is, I'm just saying is that it just opens up these possibilities for, I guess it, Oliver doesn't always have to be leading the group into mm-hmm. the story. So, at some point, it's like, okay, we're going to have Roy step forward, and we're going to tell a story that concerns him and advances his character, puts his character in the forefront. Oliver may be following or not involved in that. And, you know, just give us something else for the week. You know, let us focus on a different character, which they do, but it always seems like Oliver's got the main storyline, and then everybody else can have a sub-story. For
right.
that episode, because Oliver also has the flashback, usually, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really cool. And then another trusting moment is Laurel decides to tell her dad the truth about Sarah, which is good. I'm glad we are dealing with this sooner rather than later. I think as I talked about 2 weeks ago or 2 episodes ago when we were discussing this, that the longer this went on, the worse it was going to be. And I thought, for me, that was a really powerful scene. I thought Katie Cassidy, personally, I think Katie Cassidy did a really good job throughout the entire episode. And the fact that you've got Lance saying, oh, no, I understand. But then you realize, wait a second, no, he thinks she's talking about the fact that he knows that she is Canary. or the, you know, that she's dressing up as Canary right. now because, you know, maybe her sister's gone. Again, the man who figured out her secret identity before he's figured out who Oliver is.
Yeah, I think he's going to just finally admit to himself that he finally knows eventually. But
yeah,
that scene, I went up and down in that scene, whether I was at first I thought I was going to be disappointed. Then I thought, oh, no, this is going well. And then I thought I was going to be disappointed. I like how they kind of led her in there and he's like, no, I get it. You're a Canary. And that he didn't, mind, but he didn't try to talk her out of it, try to say, no, what are you doing? Stop. You know, he kind of understood, but then
worried that he didn't do something like, oh, hang on a second. It's time for me to take my medicine again.
Yeah.
When his phone goes off and then she's like, okay, I don't want to tell you anything. So
yeah. She just gets distracted. But I was worried that she was going to tell him about Sarah and it was going to be not as much emotion. But instead, wow. Wow.
Yeah, Paul Blackthorne nailed that.
Yeah, and I mean, that is exactly what it would have been if a father found out, you know, his daughter had died.
Again,
I mean, that was deep.
I mean, yeah, it's again, I was, and so they gave us the unexpected twist with the Thea reveal at the beginning of the episode, and they gave us, I guess it's an unexpected twist in this storyline as well, just from the fact that I think a lot of us expected he was going to have a heart attack. I mean,
yeah.
he was short of breath. He was staggering. And I mean, I can understand that, but I didn't know if they were going to play that into all of a sudden he collapses, but he collapsed, you know, from sadness,
yeah,
not
grief.
From a broken heart or whatever. So, so yeah, that was a really powerful scene, and I'm glad they did that. So, and I mentioned that I liked what Katie Cassidy was doing in this episode. What I also thought that Laurel was doing in the episode. So at the beginning, we see that Oliver says that she's not a hero, or she's not a hero yet. I can't remember exactly how he phrased it, but by the end of the episode, and through the use of some heavy psychotics, she has sort of fought. I mean, she has figuratively and literally, I guess, fought her demons and seems to have come out the other side and emerged from all of the self-doubt that has been bothering her. She seemed to have a lot of guilt bottled up inside of her about letting people down, letting her sister down, letting her dad down, letting Oliver down, letting Tommy down. Letting herself down, the fact that she, you know, was addicted to drink and everything like that. And I don't want to say that she, you know, is like cured of that, but there definitely was sort of a breakthrough moment there at the end with when she was dosed with vertigo for the second time.
So let me ask you a question about that. So,
yeah.
You said like there's a breakthrough. So I was thinking about what vertigo does, not the drug vertigo.
Okay.
What does it do to you? Now, obviously it makes you hallucinate, right?
Mm-hmm.
But is it making you hallucinate your fears, or is it, you know, your guilt, or, you know, what it feels to me like it's not like like a scarecrow kind of thing where it's your
fears.
Innermost fears,
right?
Like your fear of heights. I think it's almost like your inner struggles. Like, what is it that you are struggling with inside in your psyche?
Yeah. That's kind of what happened. If we think back to Oliver and the season premiere from this year, when he got dosed and was basically fighting himself, right? It's you're fighting your doubt, maybe. I think that's really what it comes down to. So Laurel, the biggest thing that she was worried about was the fact that everybody was comparing her to her sister, and she felt that to keep her sister alive in the metaphorical sense, she needed to become her sister, but that in some way was not respectful enough. And also the fact that she had lied to her dad, so, you know, her dad appeared to her, and she kind of cleared up both of those issues. You know, she made amends with the little talk that Felicity had with her, I think, about her sister, where Felicity was saying that, you know, Sarah wore the mask to hide from her demons as well as, you know, protect herself, whereas Laurel doesn't really have that. Laurel's got this light inside of her, which seems strange, but no, that was after the I think that speech was before she got dosed a second time.
Yeah, that was before she got dosed a second time.
Hmm.
But that's why she was able to get through it, right?
Yeah, from those kind words.
So I just, if you can overcome this doubt that you have, you can kind of deal with the vertigo better. So, you know, I think the more confident a person is, the less this vertigo is going to work on you, it seems like. And yeah. I was just curious how vertigo was affecting people.
Mm-hmm.
I was okay with that. It shocked me that she got it twice.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, she's barely going to be able to stand, but she's in it a second time. But she finally came to terms with not being Sarah. So now she can kind of move on again, another step in the evolution of this character. So,
right.
I mean, I know how much I dissed on Laurel last season and early this season, but I know she's not a strong hero. I know she's getting beat up.
Mm-hmm.
I know she's got some cheesy lines. I'm really liking her now, and that's kind of why, is mm-hmm. because I wouldn't want him to create this superhero overnight like that, because it's
right.
just not – it doesn't make enough sense to me.
Well, kind of like I mentioned earlier, I mean, she actually has something to do on the show now, so I think that's why we're liking her a little bit more, because – she is integral to the mythos of Arrow,
uh-huh.
but they just hadn't been utilizing her character for, you know, really any good reasons up through, you know, end of last season, let's say.
Right. Yep. Digging her.
So, one of the final things I want to discuss is the, kind of the switching of places that we're doing in the main storyline and in the flashback. Oliver's dealing with Waller and her threats and stuff like that in the flashback. And the episode ends and he wakes up from being drugged or punched or whatever they did to him, you know, to come from Hong Kong. Like, he was obviously able to fall asleep in Hong Kong and wake up just outside Starling City. And he and Maseo are back or coming back to Starling City. While in the present storyline, Oliver and Thea go to Lian Yu. So my question for you is, what possible reason do you think Waller has for needing Oliver back in Starling City? And don't you think that with as kind of a big a celebrity as he is at that time, I mean, it has been about 2 years since he went missing and he is presumed dead, but don't you think people would recognize him?
Oh, absolutely. And when he came back after being gone 5 years, it was, you know, news, and they were talking about him, and, you know, presumably people knew who he was. But it depends on how she's going to use him. You know, I mean, where is he going to go, and
right.
what's he going to do? And as far as what I think she wants him there for, I mean, she says it's for China White. But is there something deeper? Why does she need him? That's what I've wondered all.
Right, because she said
season.
That she has use for his unique skill set, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Something along those lines. And it's probably not that he knows how to fire that rocket launcher, that missile launcher or whatever from the island. I don't know. Maybe he's going to run into Sarah again and she's going to be assassinating people. I don't know. I have no idea where they're going with that. Maybe we'll get a little bit more next week in flashbacks if they choose to do that.
It looks like the flashback storyline for this season. I don't mind it. But there really hasn't been that much that happened, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you put all the flashbacks from the season, into, I think it would fit into one episode.
Yeah.
Just about, you know. So I kind of like some of the other flashbacks I felt like lasted over a longer stretch of time. And
yeah,
so
the island flashbacks
like,
from the first season were as long as the first season. I mean, it seemed like they were pretty evenly balanced there.
Yeah, I agreed.
At least that's so, what it felt like.
I like the storyline. I like the whole idea of him working with Maceo and how they became so close and how he helped them. But
and something's going to have to drive a wedge back between them, I feel, as well. I mean, I think they're going to have – we're going to have to see what happened to Maceo and Tatsu. Why did they break up or separate or whatever? And
either a wedge between Maceo and Oliver or just something that affected Maceo so negatively that he went to the league.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't necessarily think it has to be between him and Oliver, but it definitely has to affect him.
Right. And then Oliver and Thea go to Lian Yu because – for whatever reason, Merlin says that Oliver needs to face his fears, and P.S., why don't you take Thea with you? And, of course, there's only one place where you can do that, and that's on Lian Yu. Well, what's he got to fear going back to Lian Yu? I mean, he went back, what was it, the beginning of season two, wasn't it? I think when...
Oh, yeah. Then Diggle and Felicity came and got him.
Yeah, when they came to kind of rescue him back from the island.
Well, and he went back to take Slade.
Yeah. And so, assuming that was for a shorter trip, that was kind of just like a drop and stop. But
they pulled up to the curb in the 15-minute loading zone. And
the white zone is for loading and unloading of prisoners only. There is no stopping in the white zone. So what... Like, what does he have to fear other than Slade being on that island? But, I mean, you know, he's locked up in that prison underground. I mean, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What could go wrong?
Nothing. Nothing at all. I don't know because at some point Oliver goes back to the island in his past. Sometime before Starling City, he goes back to the island. That's where they rescued him
from. It's going to be the day before they rescue him. It's going to be – he will have been on the island for a day, and he's like, oh, well, I guess I should get rescued now.
Yeah, I guess so.
He's going to have gone everywhere in the world. And then
I'm starting to think that the day they rescued him, he was wearing like a wig and a long costume beard. I just don't think he was on the island as long as that Tom Hanks castaway beard indicated.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and he's got to go back there, but, I mean, we've still got, a little over 2 years until he supposedly is rescued. I mean, we don't even know if we're really still in kind of sync with island time. So
true. Well, and yeah. Another thing I wanted to say was, at least according to the first season monologue at the beginning on his 5 years on the hellish island, mm-hmm. He sure did seem happy to be back.
Yeah.
I'm home.
Look at this.
To hell.
This, yeah, I call it home, and some people call it purgatory, and it's like, okay. I mean, it's cool to be back on the island. It's great because we haven't, really been there for over half a year, so... It is kind of like a return, so to speak, mm-hmm. Surprisingly. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see what's going on with that. It looks like they're pulling something else out of their hat, and we will see if it is a what is the quote here? If it's quote a crazier thing than stabbing Oliver through the chest and kicking him off a cliff. So
that's crazy.
Godspeed, DJ douchebag. We hardly got to know you. Thank God.
Thank God.
I was so happy. Somebody made up a picture of a headstone, and it says DJ. Here lies DJ Chase, and then the quote below it says, "Turned down for what?"
So you're saying what we need is now a moment of techno for the end of DJ Chase. Okay, there we go.
All right, that was enough. That was probably more than enough.
Was that more than enough? Okay. All right, we're done then with him.
I do want to say I want to find out why the hell was this guy in the League of Assassins. But I'm not. If that's the one thing, Mr. Guggenheim and staff, that you never get to, okay, that's cool. But that is just a very strange choice.
He's going to have his own spinoff show, by the way.
Oh, good
Did
God.
I mention that? Okay, well.
The podcast he's will not done. Be televised. So
we're starting our own podcast on the DJ. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh. So I think we mentioned that we got a tweet from Tyler last week saying that he had a rant for us. But
yes, he did.
He didn't get it to us in time for last week's podcast. So he heard that and he tweeted back again. He's like, no, honestly, I've got it. And I tweeted back at him and I'm like, Tyler, what did I say? I don't want to be the podcast that you write to, something like that.
And then you stormed off into the alley?
Felicity, yes. And I said, when I said I wanted to be alone, that means I don't want to talk to you. But he came through on his promise. And so he sent over he said it was a rant. I'm going to say it's a slight disagreement with what happened on the show. But why don't you go ahead and tell us
can
what
we read this?
Say,
okay. Right? He says, hey, guys, so I know this is way too late to make it to the podcast. Oh, no, we got to it, see. But I have a feeling this rant will still be relevant after tonight's episode. I'll try to jump to the point. There is no way Oliver survived that fight with Roz.
Thank you. All right.
You think that's crazy? The producers killed Oliver. No question about it. That was what was clearly implied by Oliver getting stabbed through the gut with a sword and kicked off the side of a cliff in a mid-season finale that would go on to last 6 weeks long. Okay, I guess I can see where you're coming from there.
Yeah.
Oliver's life wasn't in the balance. We didn't turn the TV off after the show ended wondering if he would survive. It was clear what happened. And now he's back? Just like that? Not only did they not explain how he came back from the dead, they claimed that he didn't even die. Their explanation for one of the biggest cliffhangers of any superhero movie or show was that the cold and snow kept him alive. And the will to survive. When we see a cliffhanger, our reaction and excitement is not for what happened, but to our excitement to how they're going to get out of it. It doesn't take a high amount of writing skill to kill off a character. The writing shines through when you bring them back in an original and exciting way. I think the writers and producers simply use Oliver's faux death to drive forth the "we have to kill Roz" storyline, which is fine, but his death was a cheap trick, and they should be called out. I love this show, and I feel like I have the right to be critical of it. Excited to hear what you have to say.
Yeah,
what do you have to say, Jay?
I sent him an email back. I said I agree because where he got stabbed when he got kicked off, I mean, it was through a lung. It was under his pectoral. And then when he's being healed, it's way down in the gut, a very non-life-threatening injury. So, and then the fact that, I mean, he fell. That was a long way to fall.
Yes.
But
after
5 years in hell, you know, he just needed to cool down a little bit. So, you know, he was warm enough that the snow, you know, melted under his intense heat from being in hell for 5 years. I don't know.
I agree with Tyler. I think they should have and could have brought him back in a way that was a little bit more, believable.
Believable, like the Lazarus bit.
I don't even need to say believable because just something that just explained it a little bit more other than, hey, here's some penicillin tea. And by the way, when is Starbucks going to put penicillin tea on the menu? Because they would make a killing or a surviving, I guess.
It would not be a killing.
I agree with that. Or either that or don't, you know, stab him in a vital organ. And maybe throw him off a 10-foot cliff, or as opposed to the 150-foot cliff. But either way, yeah, I agree. I think they did it because they could. I don't have any other explanation for that.
I mean, they definitely wanted to encourage some, I think, some discussion, and they sure did. I mean, we were discussing it. It was being discussed online. You know, Stephen Amell generated a lot of commentary about, well, could they actually kill off this character? Could these other characters carry the show? I mean, mm-hmm. I think we all really knew deep down inside that that was not going to happen, but...
Yeah, and I don't know if this is a disagreement, because I know what Tyler's saying. I know where he's coming from, where he said, you know, there was no question about it when we turned the TV off that he was dead. I never believed he was truly dead.
Right.
I knew that this show is all about Stephen Amell. So,
right.
But I see what he's coming from. You know, it was pretty clear. I mean, it was just like Darth Maul getting cut in half in Episode One, Star Wars. You knew there's just no way.
He is not coming back from that.
He's not coming back for that.
Unless, yeah. I'm sorry, Felicity. Oliver won't be coming back. He's living on a farm now where he's very happy. So, all right. Well, we got a few references in this show. Most of them are. Shipping containers that just had names on them, I guess, in the battle with the canaries.
Hey, speaking of containers, did you notice in Hong Kong that Oliver's signature move to get away from people is to push them into red and yellow plastic containers?
Oh. Yeah, he did that in the marketplace, like 6-7 episodes ago, I think.
Yep, that's a signature move right there, man.
Well, he was not completely trained. Oh, I would really want to see him sliding across a bar firing a gun again. That was fun. But in the Canary battle, there was a container that had the Star Labs logo on it. There was also a container that had the Brodeur Chemical logo on it. And that may seem familiar because Brodeur Chemicals was in the first season in the episode An Innocent Man, where Oliver discovers that Jason Brodeur has killed an employee and framed her husband for murdering, and for whistleblowing on Brodeur Chemical's illegal activities. And that was one of the people that had failed the city. And then the company that Zeidel was using to manufacture the Vertigo in that he took over was Daggett Pharmaceuticals, which is, related to Roland Daggett, who's a competitor of Bruce Wayne from the DC animated universe, as seen in Batman the Animated Series. And it was also the company that created, basically, that Clayface was made from because he fell into Avada Chemicals there. And as a side note, I noticed this. I'm a big fan of Breaking Bad, and one of the chemists at Daggett looked incredibly like Walter White, a.k.a. Heisenberg from Breaking Bad. He was the one that dropped the chemical and was about to get shot. He's bald with with glasses and a goatee, and it was totally Walter White from Breaking Bad.
That's weird, because I was thinking he looked like the dad from Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, you know, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that's true. He did. He also looked like Ted's architecture boss on How I Met Your Mother. So there you go.
Weird.
Yeah.
Must just be one of those faces, I guess.
Yeah, he looks a lot like that. So anyway, we'll see, you know, if they have some other cool references coming up in future episodes, but just not a lot DC-related stuff. They were doing more, Arrow-related television emotional stuff here, so they didn't have a lot of room for that. And they didn't, you know, they had a bad guy that they were fighting, but, you know, we've already discussed Vertigo and Werner Zeidel back at the first season, first episode of this season. So you can check back on that episode to find out more. So I think that pretty much covers it for this week's episode of Green Justice.
Yeah. See, we had a lot to talk about, even though it wasn't one of those big cliff season crazy finales like Guggenheim says. But if you enjoyed this episode of Green Justice, we'd love to hear from you. So leave us some feedback on iTunes. Also, you can contact us like Tyler did. Email greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Or you can visit us over on Twitter, Green Justice Pod. And, of course, our Facebook page, facebook.com/Green Justice Podcast.
You can also check out the other podcast that Josh and I host here on randomchatter.com, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, and which we're discussing Agent Carter currently, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. All shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And, of course, if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends, coworkers, ex-wives, random hitmen, whoever you run into.
DJs.
On the DJs. Oh, of course, DJs. Yeah. Have them pump it out with their fat beats that you like our show. And because that's a great way to get other people interested in us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.
Welcome back, everybody, to DJ Douchecast.